Well, now Sophie Thompson, Rosemary Leach and a Peruvian marmoset helped to bring a final dollop of chaos to 18th century Yorkshire.
We present Babblewick Hall by Scott Cherry, starring Nicholas Le Prevost and Forbes Masson.
Augustus, I need to be dressed immediately. I'm about to visit Lady Keene and her pet monkey. Wait, you're not Augustus?
No, Squire.
You're Jack?
Yes, Squire.
Well, where's Augustus?
Mr. Sniper has asked me to tell you that he's suffering from such a diabolical lowering of the spirits and is in such a fearsome tremble from the terrors that he's unable to raise himself from his bed. In fact, he finds himself so overcome with the moat and so withered by the lingering melancholia that he feels he may end up taking his own life.
But where does that leave me?
Sir?
I can't keep Lady Keene and her monkey waiting. I need to be dressed.
Which is why I am here, sir.
But Ramillies' wig needs to be powdered, and he was supposed to darn my blue stockings. What right has he got to suffer from melancholia? He's a servant.
I think that is why Mr. Snipe feels, Squire, that life is no longer worth the struggle and the effort.
But
in fact, he said that he'd sooner serve as apprentice to a drunken bricklayer who suffered the agonies of being constantly struck by the iron path of a trowel than continue to be your valet.
He what?
Oh, good, Mr. Snipe, you're awake. I thought it was something that might help recover your spirit. Some boiled cow heel.
Uh-huh.
Would you like me to feed it to you?
Oh,
Mr. Snipe, don't say you've lost the will to speak. I've just spoken to Ruth Norton. She says a profound weariness of life is usually brought on by a vicious derangement of stomach and bowel, and that all you need to do is drink lots of cold tea.
All the tea in China couldn't raise me from this bed. Molly, I think I'm going to die from too much sadness.
Don't say that, Mr. Snipe. Try the cow heel.
No, thank you. I haven't the appetite for food. I haven't the appetite for life.
You just had a bad day yesterday, that's all.
I'm always having a bad day. Yesterday was the same as any other. I woke at 5, shivering like an eel, roused the squire, washed him, shaved him, dressed him, powdered his wig, polished his riding boots, served his breakfast, emptied his chamber pot. I did what I always do for the man. Everything.
What can I expect? You're a domestic.
Oh.
Why the sudden gloves?
It's these. You parried them, Molly.
Sir, you must pay me 4 and 6 for getting the rats out of your upholstery.
And this?
To Mr. Chapelow for 3 new cows. 33 guineas due.
And this. There's hundreds of them, Molly. The squire's so far in debt, he's going to get himself hanged.
To Mrs. Ruddock for cutting thistles, 6 due. You mean he hasn't even paid Agnes?
And when the letter carrier brought this, I nearly died from the vapours.
What does it say?
It's from a Mr. Little, who happens to be the receiver general for the window tax.
Oh, no.
Yes, sir. According to our records, Babblewick Hall has 62 windows. And I'm writing to inform you that I will be arriving to confirm that you have, as you claim, bricked up every single one.
We haven't bricked up so much as a peephole.
I know.
And he's coming soon.
I told the squire, and all he could talk about was Lady Keene and our pet monkey. Oh, boy. We're all going to end up in debtor's prison.
Molly, here we are, sir. Have you settled up, Hercules?
He's ready and waiting, Squire.
Now, remember, you follow behind in the slow wagon and wait for the signal.
What signal?
Whenever Lady Keene wins a cribbage, she always runs off to tell her maids. That's when I'll open the window and hand you the monkey.
You're going to hand it to us?
I'm not holding no monkey.
Me neither.
Why ever not?
It might bite.
Bite! Jack, a monkey is an incredibly intelligent creature.
Is it?
Yes.
Just explain to the monkey that we're acting on behalf of the newly formed National Society for the Liberation of Oppressed Animals. A society whose ultimate aim is to outlaw the domestication of all animals and make the eating of meat a capital offense.
And you think a monkey will understand all that?
I didn't.
This may astound you, Barney, but orangutans and baboons have been known to read and write.
Really?
A gibbon, educated at Magdalen College, has just published an authoritative study on the decline and fall of the Roman Empire.
But don't you think we've stolen enough animals, Squire?
We haven't stolen them. We've freed them.
Listen to all them pit ponies. The stables are full of them.
And we've had to put all the birds we saved from the cockfighting inside the house.
But,
and the fox we took from Squire Bristol's house. It's ended up in Molly's pantry.
We can't take any more animals, Squire. We just can't.
Are you saying that we should have left that fox to be savaged to death, abandoned those ponies to the dismal hell of the mines, let those cocks tear each other to shreds?
Yes. Yes.
Never. Hogarth's wrong when he says England's a hell for horses. England's a hell for all animals.
But what if this monkey bites, Squire?
It won't bite. Now, follow behind as quickly as you can. As soon as we've got the monkey, we must ride to the fair in Hockley to liberate a bear.
A bear?
Yes, it's there for tomorrow's baiting. I'm told they intend covering the poor creature in fireworks.
A bear?
Oh, Mr. Babelwick, you're here.
But of course, Lady Keen.
Oh, sir, I've been in such a state of glorious anticipation at the prospect of your company. I'm not ashamed to say, Mr. Babelwick, that I have been quite agog with the flutters.
Really?
In fact, I have been so gripped by the fidgets, it took my maid all of 2 hours to get me into my dress. They barely had time to administer my cosmetic wash. And look! Look at Ponto!
Ponto?
My South American marmoset.
Ah, yes.
He's as excited as I am.
Your lady...
I have to say, Dan, that when I received your written communication yesterday, I was rendered quite breathless.
I'm sorry?
That you should declare your love for me so passionately.
What?
It can only mean, sir, that your true motive in coming here today, sir, is not to play at cards, but to ask me to be your wife.
I beg your pardon.
And my answer is yes! 1,000 times, yes, yes, I shall be his wife, shan't I, Ponto? Oh, yes.
But...
And, sir, I promise that even though I speak Greek and have read Miss Wollstonecraft's Rights of Women, I'm no truck, sir, with petticoat government. Oh, no, I know only too well, Mr. Babelwick, that wit in a woman is apt to have bad consequences.
Lady Keena, you say that I have passionately declared my love to you?
In your letter. Shall I read it?
Please do.
My dear Lady Keene, oh, was there ever a more ardent address? Have ever those 2 hot, sweaty twins, lust and desire, shown themselves so openly?
Well,
my dear Lady Keene, I accept your kind invitation to play at cards and will arrive at 11 sharp. Yours, Fenton Babelwick.
And That's passionate?
Oh, Mr. Babelwick. Any other gentleman would have said he'd be arriving at 11 o'clock. Whereas you, sir, you, in your rampant eagerness to persecute your affections, clearly state that you will be arriving at 11 o'clock sharp. Does that not, sir, communicate an overwhelming urge to grab me for a wife?
No, it doesn't.
What?
Lady Keen, I'm here to enjoy a cup of lemon tea and a few rounds of 6-card cribbage. That's all.
But
I have no intention of asking you to be my wife.
Then
such a thought never entered my mind.
Then are you saying, sir, are you saying that I'm to remain a solitary old maid?
Well, I...
With no one to talk to, no one to provide the blessing of companionship of my dear, devoted Ponto. Have I misunderstood?
To speak frankly, Lady Keene, and if I may be permitted to adopt the directness and bluntness of a Cicero, I've no more intention of marrying you than I have of feasting on the entire contents of an alehouse spittoon. I'm sorry.
If you'll excuse me, Mr. Babelwick, while I go into the next room to weep.
Now's my chance. Ponto. Ponto.
much time. I'm here to set you free. I'm going to open a window and throw you down to my servants. Do you understand? If you just let me unhook your chain and pick you up. Right. That's it. Jack Barney.
Yes,
I'm about to throw the monkey. Are you ready?
You catch him. No, you catch him.
No, you.
You do it.
Why, sir? I said, are you ready?
Yes, quiet.
Here he comes. One, two, three.
No.
You got him. I'm not Lady Keane.
Where's Potter?
Your ladyship, it was the strangest thing. As soon as you left the room, he leapt from his perch, opened the window and jumped.
Jumped?
I had grabbed his empty, it was too quick.
What?
I have never seen an animal move so fast.
You mean he's gone and left me?
Why do you think he's shaking?
Because you keep pointing that pistol at him. He's going to die of fright.
He might bite me. Those teeth look sharp.
On it!
Here he comes.
Where's the monkey?
Don't worry, we've got him.
Ah. Are you all right, Squire? No. Lady Keane hit me over the head with a teapot.
Your chin's bleeding.
Yeah, then she scratched me with the ivory tips of a Viennese fan. Oh, the poor thing looks terrified.
I think he's afraid of Barney's pistol.
Pistol? Barney! What is he going to do? Put it away! The poor creature's been through enough as it is.
Sorry, sir.
I shall now prove to you just how intelligent a monkey can be. Hunter, I stand before you on behalf of the National Society for the Liberation of Oppressed Animals. My name is Fenton Babwick. You may know me as the author of that revolutionary treatise, A Philosophical Inquiry into Man's Moral Duty to the Brute Creation.
I don't think he's ready, Squire.
Firstly, may I apologize on behalf of the whole host of humankind for the shameless manner in which you must have been seized from your Amazonian home. And it must have been quite distressing to be chained to a perch in a lady's chamber and stuffed with sugar plums and sweetmeats.
Sounds heaven.
We shall do all we can to get you back to South America as quickly as possible.
Eh?
Oh, blimey.
He's holding out his hand, Squire.
He wants you to shake it.
Oh. Was there ever a moment more symbolic of the love and understanding that can exist between man and beast than this? Of course I should take your hand. You dear, dear little fellow.
He bit me!
What's he looking to it again? And after all, I... Barney, give me that pistol!
What?
Now give it to me! Get it!
Fire!
You work every hour, God sends. Every cursed hour, distributing pamphlets to every coach house, delivering speeches from every market cross, championing the cause of distressed animals, and what happens? What happens? You get savaged in the hand by a Peruvian marmoset!
I think you've killed him, Squire.
Oh, Molly, how could I do such a thing? How?
It's all right.
All it did was nip me on the hand. It was barely a flesh wound. And what did I do? I blew its brains out.
Move back a bit, Squire, so I can get your dinner on the table.
Poor creature was obviously terrified. It probably thought I was going to skin it alive or...
Here you are, sir.
To think I'd introduce myself as the animal kingdom's greatest friend.
Just calm yourself down, sir, and try and enjoy your dinner. Eat it before it gets cold.
What is it?
One of your own vegetarian recipes. Cabbage stew. I know you told me vegetables have feelings, so I apologize to the cabbage before I bought it.
You're me. I don't care.
What's happening?
There he is.
Agnes,
man, please. Agnes, what are you doing here?
I just want to ask Mr. Babblewick why he hasn't paid me the sixpence he owes me for cutting his thistles.
What?
3 days it took me to clear that field of your squire. 3 days.
I...
Now, come on, Agnes.
I'm a 95-year-old woman. Bent double with age and infirmity. Don't you deny me. Rheumatics and ague. But I've still got the pride to work.
Oh, my God, she's dribbling.
Please. Do you know why the paupers of this parish hate me, Squire? Do you? Because I've never taken so much as a penny in parochial aid. And they see my labour as a reproach to their idleness.
My dear Mrs. Ruddock.
And when my good husband died, they accused me of being proud just because I worked 20 hours a day to pay for a coffin with handles. Work's all I know. It's been my life ever since I helped my mother sell books at the age of 4. And I'm telling you, Squire, even though I haven't had the money to break bread these past 3 days, if you don't pay me that sixpence, I'll starve before I take so much as a farthing in poor relief.
My dear Mrs. Rutter, are you saying you haven't eaten for 3 days?
Nothing but 3 blackberries and a mallard's egg.
Augustus, why haven't we given her the sixpence?
Because we haven't got it, Squire.
We haven't got sixpence?
No.
But, Molly.
What?
Take Mrs. Ruddock down to the kitchen and give her this cabbage stew.
Oh, thank you, sir. Thank you.
And you have my word. The very first sixpence I see shall be yours.
Come on, Agnes.
And I implore you not to leave my kitchen until you've eaten your fill.
I think we've just got to blame God Almighty, Squire, for letting me suffer to remain upon this earth for so long. I can only think that he's gone and forgotten all about me.
Surely we can give the poor woman sixpence.
No. Oh, why ever not?
Because all we've got is tuppence halfpenny, and according to my calculations, your total debt runs to some 700 guineas.
700?
Which doesn't include what you owe the Receiver General in window tax.
But how did this happen?
How do you think? Because instead of managing the estate, you've spent the last 6 months travelling the county, campaigning for a shorter working week for carrier pigeons.
Somebody's got to help those poor animals,
just as somebody's got to give a poor old woman the sixpence she's due for cutting thistles.
What you never, ever seem to accept, Augustus, is that if I am born to greatness...
You're not born to greatness, Squire! And you will not be going down in history as the champion of animals' rights.
I will.
You won't!
I will.
Where are you going?
To the Hockley Fair. To save a bear from the baiting.
Did you stay here?
Let go.
No.
I said let go. You're my servant, for heaven's sake.
These are the demands for payment that arrived this morning.
I don't want to hear. I don't want to hear.
You're going to face up to reality, whether you like it or not.
I am a radical and visionary, and I have got far more important things to do than face up to reality.
Now, let's see. Oh, dear.
What?
What is it? Mr. Chappell has written to say he's told the magistrate you owe him 33 guineas for the new cows.
The magistrate? I'm ruined. I'm ruined. No, Augustus, I beg you, please.
This is from...
Don't tell me. Is it from the magistrate? Take me out of his conviction.
It's,
I'll sell the entire Babel with this table. I'll escape to America with a shipload of convicts and fallen women.
No need.
And I'll work the tobacco plantations of Virginia, and I'll become a Puritan and wear nothing but black and white, eat nothing but raw potatoes and... What did you say?
There's no need to sell the estate or emigrate to America, it would seem.
What?
It would appear, Squire, that your uncle, Mr. Septimus Horatio Babblewick, the great gin manufacturer, has just died.
So?
And it would also appear that he's died, leaving you the bulk of his fortune.
No!
Let me see.
Oh, I knew it. I knew something would come to my rescue. Look at the amount. Let me see.
$50,000.
I'll never face debt again.
It does say there is one small condition.
The first thing I'll do is give Agnes Ruddock her sixpence.
But it's hardly worth whining about.
And then I'll pay Chapelot for the cows.
It'll be no trouble at all.
And then I'll be able to pay all my... What small condition?
Oh, it just states, Squire, that your uncle has insisted that in order to get his money, you have to do one very tiny... insignificant little thing. Let me see. So incredibly tiny and inconsequential, it's hardly worth attention.
Oh.
Sir?
How dare he?
Jack, have you settled up, Hercules?
Nearly, Squire. Steady, boy.
Sir, don't go.
Hurry up, Jack.
Wait, Squire, please. Where are you going?
To see the magistrate.
But why?
To get down on my hands and knees and beg him not to make me a common debtor for the sake of 700 guineas.
But how can you be made a common debtor when your uncle's just left you a fortune of 50,000 pounds?
What?
Gusters, please.
Have you just inherited 50,000 pounds, Squire?
No.
Yes, he has. Blimey!
What Augustus is neglecting to mention is that I will only receive that money if I make an attempt to continue the Babelwick line.
Meaning?
Meaning, Barney, that my uncle's will stipulates that I can only inherit if I agree to pop my head through the matrimonial noose and find myself a wife.
And what's wrong with that?
Marry and risk having children? A cursed progeny of woeful imps? Never. Help me in the saddle, Barney.
Then it's debtor's prison.
Squire,
we'll see about that.
Squire, don't go. Mr. Little's arrived and wants to see you.
Who?
The receiver general for the window tax. He's just added up all the windows.
Oh
no.
And he says you owe him just over 3,000 guineas.
What?
3,140, to be exact. That's if you include the fan light above the parlour door.
But
I told you he should have bricked them all up.
But I...
Oh, dinged.
It looks, Squire, as if you're going to have to find yourself a wife.
Mr. Babelwick!
Tis I, Lady Keane. Tis I.
May I ask you the purpose of this visit?
The purpose?
Is it to apologize for allowing my beloved Ponto to escape?
Well, I...
It may interest you to know. The poor creature was found on the common highway, shot through the head.
Oh, no.
The one true friend I have ever known.
Oh, well, I don't know, all because I was foolish enough to let him open the window. Oh, how I hate myself.
Well...
Your ladyship, please. Allow me to make amends. Lady Keane, I find myself so touched by the wretchedness of your solitary life that I am prepared to make the supreme sacrifice and, on bended knee, offer myself to you as a husband.
Oh, sir, if you come here with the intention of seizing me for a wife, then I'm afraid you will be returning to Babelwick Hall a disappointed man.
I'm sorry?
Yes, indeed.
I don't understand. I thought you wanted a husband. You seemed desperate beyond the point of all dignity.
You may remember, sir, that I told you I had read Miss Wollstonecraft's Rights of Women, and that I have no truck with petticoat government. Well, my mind, sir, is now completely changed.
Oh, no.
Your cruel insults, Mr. Babelwick, in comparing me unfavorably to the entire contents of an alehouse spittoon, forced me to realize that I should in fact glory in my misfortune. And I now know, sir, that I am indeed blessed to be plain of feature, indifferent of complexion, and strangely large in the hands.
Your ladyship, I...
I consider it a blessing to be saved from an institution which subordinates women and forces them into giving up their liberty, estate, and authority to a man. A contract which turns women into nothing more than unpaid upper servants.
Oh, then you've become a blue stocking?
Indeed I have. Oh. And it may interest you to know, Mr. Babelwick, that I intend making a stir in Parliament, and that I also intend enlisting the support of countless ladies of nobility and position in an attempt to win for myself the reputation as a champion of women's rights.
Women's what?
So I can assure you, sir, that I am no longer prepared to humiliate myself by wanting you, a tuppenny, halfpenny, crackpot squire, for a husband. Good day, Mr. Babelwick.
But, your ladyship, why can't we be champions of women's rights together?
What?
Because I have to say that I, too, am utterly, utterly appalled at the way marriage subordinates women.
You
are? Yes. I will never cease to be sickened at the manner in which fathers treat their daughters as commodities to be bargained away like livestock.
I see.
And did it not
totally unforgivable that for the sake of securing a handsome dowry, a man will expect a woman to enter into a marriage devoid of all affection and force her to endure the misery of being bound to him for life in a contract which takes away all liberty and dignity.
Oh,
the time has come for women to be treated as more than just fruitful wombs with barren brains.
Yes.
Women must be seen as more than just children of a larger group.
Indeed.
Marry me, Lady Keane, and together we will show the world that men and women can exist side by side as equals.
Oh!
We shall form the National Society for the Liberation of Oppressed Women.
Oh, sir!
And so we shall go down in the history books together, hand in hand, as those two great champions of equality, Fenton Babelwick and wife.
Oh, Mr. Babelwick, I will marry you, I will!
Lady Keane? I think she's fainted.
Any news, Squire?
Yes. Well, the doctor is of the opinion that Lady Keane was so overcome by excitement at my marriage proposal that she died as soon as she hit the floor.
Oh, no.
Which means that you're going to have to find somebody else to marry.
Oh, Jack, please. But it's a fact, Squire. If you don't get your uncle's money, then it's death as prison for all of us.
Oh. Wait. I've got it.
What?
Why doesn't the Squire marry Molly? Me?
Eh?
That's a wonderful idea.
What?
No.
But yeah, Barney's right. Just think, girl.
No.
With 50,000 guineas in the squire's pocket, we'll live like kings.
Jack, please, that's an utterly ridiculous suggestion.
Thank you, sir.
It would be the grossest to all offences against nature for me to marry Molly.
Why?
Why, Squire?
Yeah, why?
Because, Molly, I am an educated gentleman. You're a common servant.
But that hasn't stopped people before.
No. What about Lady Wentworth?
Who?
What about her? She married a footman.
Did she?
Yes.
And Squire Peterson married his cook, just because she dressed a lovely bit of colour.
Oh, yes. It's happening more and more all the time, Squire.
Molly?
What?
Well, if you consider that I could be facing 20 years in jail.
Squire!
For the sake of a fortune, Molly.
Molly.
I'd sooner pull a flower for Rose, but no.
Oh, but
1,000 times no.
Then the Squire's left with only one choice.
Hmm?
Allow me to introduce you all to the future Lady of Balwick Hall. In you come.
Mr. Snipe told me that if I married you, Squire, you'd be able to give me that sixpence.
Agnes?
Squire? Don't worry, Squire. She promises to shave her beard off for the wedding.
Babelwick Hall was written by Scott Cherry and starred Nicholas Leprevaux, Forbes Masson, Dave Hill, Maggie McCarthy, Benedict Sandiford, Rosemary Leach, and Sophie Thompson. The music was composed by Paul Mottram, and the producer was John Rolfe.